Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. We welcome you to the Semler Scientific's year-end 2018 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during today's conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call may be recorded. Before we begin, Semler Scientific would like to remind you that this conference call may contain forward-looking statements. Such statements can be identified by words such as may, will, expect, anticipate, estimate, or words with similar meaning, and such statements involve a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause Semler Scientific's actual results to differ materially from those discussed here. Please note that these forward-looking statements reflect Semler Scientific's opinion only as of the date of this presentation and undertakes no obligation to revise or publicly release the results of any revision to these forward-looking statements in light of new information or future events. Please refer to Semler Scientific's SEC filings for a more detailed description of the risk factor that may affect Semler Scientific's results and these forward-looking statements. Now, I would like to introduce Doug Murphy-Chutorian, CEO of Semler Scientific. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining the Semler Scientific 2018 fourth quarter and year-end financial results call. Semler is an emerging growth company that provides technology solutions to improve the clinical effectiveness and efficiency of healthcare providers. Our mission is to develop, manufacture, and market innovative products that assist our customers in evaluating and treating chronic diseases. We believe that our technology and software solutions enable our customers to identify when preventive care options are appropriate and to intervene before events like heart attacks and strokes occur. Comparing 2018 to 2017 results, the highlights of today's report are as follows. Number one, annual revenue grew 73%, or $9 million, and net income grew $6.5 million. Number two, annual earnings per share were $0.82 basic and $0.66 diluted, which compares to a net loss of $0.28, both basic and diluted. Number three, total liabilities were reduced by $3.3 million, and all notes and accrued interest were repaid with cash from operations. Number four, cash was $3.3 million at year-end compared to $1.5 million one year ago. 2018 was the best year in our company's history based on revenue and net income. Management believes that customer and market interest in our product is growing and continuing to grow. In 2019, we expect to see sequential growth in license revenue with occasional outsized spurts of such revenue growth. Such spurts are primarily due to larger-than-usual orders from our largest customers. For the next part of today's presentation, please refer to the financial results described in the press release that was distributed this morning. For the year 2018 compared to 2017, annual revenue was $21.5 million compared with $12.5 million. Operating expense, which includes cost of revenue, was $16.1 million, an increase of $2.8 million compared to $13.3 million. Net income was $5 million compared with a net loss of $1.5 million. In 2018, earnings per share were calculated using a basic share count of 6,079,326 and a diluted share count of 7,629,523. Comparing the annual results from 2018 to 2017, revenue increased 73% and operating expense increased 21%. Earnings improved as net income increased by $1.10 per basic share and $0.94 per diluted share. Analyzing the expense categories and 2018 earnings as a percentage of annual revenue, Cost of revenue was 13% of annual revenue. Engineering and product development expense was 10% of annual revenue. Sales and marketing expense was 33% of annual revenue. General and administrative expense was 19% of annual revenue. And net income was 23% of annual revenue. As of December 31, 2018, compared to December 31, 2017, Semler had cash of $3.3 million, an increase of $1.8 million compared to $1.5 million, primarily due to cash provided by operations from net income, as adjusted by items such as exercise of warrants and options, which provided $870,000 in proceeds, and partially offset by accounts receivable, which increased by $1.5 million, purchases of inventory and capital expenditures of $790,000, reduction of $3.3 million in total liabilities, including repayment of all notes and accrued interest. The combination of earnings and exercise of stock options and of warrants resulted in an increase in stockholders' equity, which totaled $4.2 million as of December 31, 2018. It is the intent of the company to relist its stock on NASDAQ, which requires a minimum stockholders' equity of $5 million, among other criteria. We have not yet announced a timeline for the application process. Our annual report on Form 10-K will include our cash flow statement and more discussion of our cash and liquidity. For the quarter ended December 31, 2018, compared to the corresponding period of 2017, revenue was $6 million, an increase of $1.8 million, or 42%, from $4.2 million. Operating expense, which includes cost of revenue, was $4.5 million, an increase of $680,000, or 18%, from $3.8 million. Net income was $1.4 million, an increase of $1.1 million from $250,000. Earnings per share were 22 cents per basic share and 17 cents per diluted share for the quarter ended December 31, 2018. Analyzing the expense categories and earnings in the fourth quarter of 2018 as a percentage of quarterly revenue, cost of revenue was 12% of quarterly revenue, engineering and product development expense was 11% of quarterly revenue, sales and marketing expense was 32% of quarterly revenue, general and administrative expense was 21% of quarterly revenue, and net income was 24% of quarterly revenue. In 2018, we were profitable every quarter and for the entire year, which is a milestone achievement for the company. We also generated positive cash flow from operations in every quarter. We believe that these trends will continue in 2019. Now, to reiterate, although we do not give formal guidance, we are intent on continuing strong annual revenue growth, increasing profitability, and generating cash during 2019. We believe revenue will continue to grow due to the increased numbers of installations of our product, more usage of our product, and recurring revenue from the licensing business. In addition, we expect more additions to our customer base and expanded orders from existing customers. So more new customers and expanded orders from existing customers. One footnote. Previously, we have categorized our revenue streams as coming from licenses or usage fees. Now and in the future, we will simply report on revenues that are recognized monthly from either fixed fee contracts or variable fee contracts, which are based on usage. We refer to these revenues as license revenues for vascular testing products, and we won't detail the percentage mix of these contracts. In 2019, we expect license revenue to continue to grow due to the increased numbers of installations from both new and established customers and recurring revenue from the licensing business. Now, the historical pattern of quarterly revenue seen in both 2017 and 2018 was that the first quarter was the lowest amount and every quarter thereafter increased. This may or may not be the pattern in 2019. Although we don't give formal guidance or quantify our expectations for revenue earnings, management believes that customer and market interest in our product is growing. We expect continued sequential growth in license revenue due to our recurrent revenue model, with occasional outsized spurts in license revenue growth. These spurts are due to larger than usual orders and the timing of when installation and billing begin for such large orders. In 2019, operating expenses are expected to increase from quarter to quarter as the business grows. When we anticipate that there might be near-term increases in future revenue, we may increase operating expenses in order to have in place the necessary infrastructure, products, and staff to support an expanding business. It is our intent to grow revenue at a faster rate than expenses and to remain profitable. There is no plan to raise additional capital at this time. We reserve the right to change our financing plans as opportunity or need arises. Also, we have yet to establish a time schedule to apply for a relisting of our common stock on NASDAQ. We met our goals of 2018 to grow revenue, increase earnings, and to further establish our QuantaFlo product as a standard of care in the industry. We are intent on achieving these same goals in 2019, especially to further establish QuantaFlo as a standard of care in the industry. We believe that the market for vascular disease testing is large relative to our current market penetration, so there's room for continued growth. We think Semler Scientific is well positioned in this healthcare market because we deliver cost-effective wellness solutions for the care of patients with chronic diseases. We may improve the health outcomes for patients by identifying those who benefit from preventive health measures. And we provide economics that work for the providers, the facilities, the insurance plans, the government, and the patients. To conclude my prepared remarks, in terms of both financial performance and the number of patients being tested with our products, 2018 was a record year for the company. I thank you for your interest in the company and your continuing support. And now, operator, could you please open the lines for questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star, then the one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. In order to prevent any background noise during response, we ask you to please place your line on mute once your question has been stated. And again, there's a star, then one to ask a question. And our first question comes from the line of Brooks O'Neill with Lake Street Capital. Your line's now open.
Good morning, Doug, and congratulations on a terrific year. I have a few questions. I guess I would like to start by asking you, you commented on the third quarter call that you felt the third quarter was, I think you said something like the best in history, and I'm curious how you would characterize the fourth quarter, maybe in relation to what you saw in the third quarter and what you expect in 2019. Are you there?
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by.
Hello?
Doug?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Sure, we can hear you. This
okay.
is Brooks.
Yeah,
can
I apologize, Brooks. It seemed to have disconnected when you couldn't hear me originally. The R&D, for the quarter, the R&D projects were very successful. Our infrastructure built quite nicely and timely. We had, the sales team was magnificent. And finance cleared up the balance sheet. And I'm particularly excited if you do your calculation of free cash flow or free cash flow per share. So in my mind, a terrific quarter. I think also, you know, it's important probably to say that in the third quarter call, I wanted to make sure that people didn't think revenue growth was slowing. So I said that customer interest in the product is increasing in the opinion of management team, which I've said today as well. Also, we mentioned this concept of spurts in revenue, which I know you're familiar with, but for those who might not be, in the past,
We have had larger size orders, and I mentioned that that might be the case on the third quarter call, from customers who plan to install our software on their own tablets. Now, as an accommodation for their IT departments, we may begin billing monthly license fees upon first use of each unit rather than our usual pattern, which is on shipment. So that means IT can install at their own pace. Now, that's feasible because we're connected to all the units and we know the day that first use happens. Now, historically, when I mentioned this, for example, in the fourth quarter of 2017, the bulk of these orders become billable about 4 to 5 months after shipment. Hence, you saw a fairly big increase in the second quarter of last year. So we made that statement about what happened in September, so you can do the math in terms of what we think is happening. So in other words, very happy with the progress, new customers and more orders coming in the fourth quarter, and a nice start for 2019 given what I had previously reported.
Great. That's very, very helpful. I appreciate that. So you alluded to the success of engineering and product development and sales. I noticed, obviously, the expenses were up, particularly in percentage terms. It's not a big dollar increase, but could you comment on the big items that you're spending money on that would help us understand some of the priorities of the company?
Sure. Expense increases is probably a good sign in the sense that we're trying to make sure the infrastructure is in place for what we think is coming as near-term growth. The type of expenses we have to do in terms of human infrastructure is clinical installers and sales engineering help. That's, in general, the ads that we make. And similarly, on the R&D side, which you asked about, the predominant thing we do is work with consulting R&D, so sometimes we have increased expenses because of that. And we've been working on upgrading the product so that its usefulness, feasibility, ease of use, and data services are all improved for the larger customer. So in essence, that's where the numbers come from, and that's exactly what we would continue to do in the future. So in other words, I might be happy when we spend more in a quarter because it suggests that we have some visibility and we're trying to work on that anticipated increase that we see in the future.
I've kind of said to people that I think you rarely spend money if you don't have a pretty good line of sight to how you're going to get a return on it, and I assume that's still very much the case.
We like to think we know how to do that.
Yes, that's good. You commented on the improvements in the balance sheet and whatnot. I just want to be sure I understand. The share count was up a million shares or something this quarter. I assume that's option and warrant exercise. Are there a large number of warrants still outstanding that have yet to be exercised? And could you give us a feel for how many, what they look like, what the exercise price is, et cetera?
Sure. As of December 31st, 2018, outstanding were 6,324,985 common shares. There were 276,214 warrants, priced probably at approximately $4.50 a share. Please don't quote me on it. I don't have those numbers in front of me.
Sure.
There were 1,481,591 vested stock options, and there were 279,856 unvested stock options. So that total, it's not an average weighted diluted share count, but is what I call a fully diluted share count, would be something closer to about 8.3 million with 300,000 of it unvested.
Okay, that's very helpful. I appreciate that. And then I'm guessing you gave us quite a lot of color about, you know, what you see sort of in the pipeline and the potential for outsized spurts. I assume, but maybe you could just clarify, are you making those comments because you already have orders in hand, or are these things you think might materialize as the year unfolds?
There might be both. Since we don't give guidance, I'm a little bit constrained to put too much color associated with the comment.
Sure. Okay. That's great. I appreciate it. Congratulations. Keep up all the good work.
Thank you, Brooks. Thanks for the questions. Operator, are we still connected? I do not know if you can hear me. I cannot hear
you. And ladies and gentlemen, our next question comes from the line of Brian Markex with Stack Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Doug, and congrats on the quarter and the year.
Thanks, Brian.
Doug, as you mentioned, that you are seeing increased customer demand, and I wonder if you can just give us a little bit of insight into what the, I guess, the main drivers of what the demand is.
We believe that the QuantaFlow product or the QuantaFlow program for our customers provides substantial value, both in terms of clinical value and economic value. We think they're recognizing that. In fact, in some organizations, I believe QuantaFlow is now a standard of care within subdivisions or divisions. So we think that the message has gotten to them basically because they've used the product, they've studied it now for years in various ways, and they're convinced that it works for their organizations and for their patients. I think that's the key as to why we think the growth is occurring. Excellent clinical results, excellent economics, and which follows from the fact that the product is easy to use and is working well in the clinic environments.
Doug, is there, from your perspective, is there growing market awareness just in general of the importance of PAD testing?
I believe that there is. I believe, like, compared to years ago, we see more people calling us up and less of us pursuing, and a better understanding amongst those customers as to what the value of PAD testing is. So the answer is yes, the market's maturing nicely with better information available to potential customers.
As I'm sure you know, Boston Scientific recently got FDA approval for the first drug-eluting stent for PAD treatment. Has that, and maybe it's a little too early to ask the question, but has that, in your opinion, helped the PAD market, I guess, in general, and specifically PAD testing?
I don't think it's had an effect on where we're at. We are really interested in identifying patients early enough so that preventive health measures can start. Of course, we do recognize some people also who don't have symptoms in general but do have severe disease that would benefit from interventional. So I would say that it may ultimately have an impact with improvements in interventional, but the improvements in prevention have been well documented in the literature from early detection. So I think that is really the therapy, if you will, the therapeutic choice that we're most interested in. Have people prevent them. The procedure in the first place is a terrific alternative. Of course, a procedure is better than having a heart attack or an amputation, I understand. But the emphasis is really on early detection and early behavioral modifications.
Then on CapEx for 2019, I know you don't provide guidance, but just relative to 2018, can you help us with what we should expect in terms of guidance and how that might compare to or help us with CapEx in 2019 compared to 2018?
As you know, 2018 compared to 2017, you saw a substantial improvement in gross margin. The primary reasons for the improvement, really, that there are lower depreciation per installed unit per month because there's a lower residual value for the retired units. And that occurs because more and more, when we used to deliver a software sensor and potentially a laptop, we now really are more likely to be downloading onto an existing laptop or tablet that's owned by the customer. So in essence, our costs have decreased accordingly. because of that, therefore our CapEx expenditures are substantially less because we don't have to buy any laptops. So you can anticipate that we will probably be buying CapEx at a level that may be the same or a little less. So we don't give guidance depending upon our sales. I can't be too specific once again with you on that particular item, but I wouldn't think there's any big increases for sure or much change at all. If anything, maybe a little bit of improvement.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Kyle Bowser with Dougherty & Company. Your line's now open.
Hey, Doug. Good morning. Congrats on a great 2018.
Thank you, Kyle.
I know you're not breaking out license and per-use sales anymore, but what were the percent of sales from the top two clients in the year or quarter?
That is, I don't think we've announced that yet. That will be in the 10-K. Not too remarkably different, you would imagine, from what we've had before. In general, from in previous quarters, we seem to have seen the top client go down a little bit in percentage, which is a good sign. It means that we're getting either further penetration in the market, but doesn't really reflect anything about that client. So I don't think there are too many surprises there, but I can't give you the exact numbers for that reason.
Okay. So if we assume United Health kind of sticks around the 50% of sales mark, can you give us an update on adoption of QuantaFlow within United Health and how you expect installations to ramp here? I think the last time there was a major rollout within this account was this time last year. So any updates would be great as we think about further penetration in this account.
Well, remember, the people have gone in, on the outside and determined by looking at job listings, et cetera, that that's an account of ours. And, you know, we certainly can assess that that's what has been done. And also, in the thinking of that, just given our percentages, if they were the largest client, you would assume that they're still a very low single-digit penetration. So the answer to the question is that the percentage is still relatively low. And I think you've estimated in the past something like less than 10% or so. So I don't think there's anything wrong with those estimates, but I'm really kind of not confirming or denying here. The other thing just to potentially mention is that, as you said, we're not doing this breakout anymore. In case there are any questions about why, it's actually interesting. There's a growing overlap of what we're calling now fixed and variable type licenses. So that actually the categories are not as distinct as we thought they might be. In other words, some customers may have hybrid licenses employing both types of arrangements. So it's becoming impractical to separate those categories. So it's more accurate to just describe one category, that is license revenue. So that's why we made the change in that direction. So it's getting to be pretty interesting.
Sure. Okay, and then back to a follow-up of Brooks's questions on Q3 being one of the best quarters ever. You know, if we assume your installed base is, say, 7,000 units right now or 2% penetrated, as you've mentioned, can you give us an idea maybe of how big the number of new installations could be for this new client? I mean, is it a few hundred units, is it a few thousand units? And just to be clear, is it fair to assume we'll see this recognized in Q1?
Well, if in the past, in the more distant past, we were talking about a 2% market penetration and you see an annual revenue gain of 73%, you have to assume that we're closer to 2 to 3 or 3 to 4. So that's just, you know, we're not making an announcement of what that number is, but you can probably make those kind of assumptions. And if you're anticipating that a percentage market share is 7,000 units, then you can also do the math. I mean, that's, once again, your number. We're not exactly putting a particular number on it, although we have said in the past that the number of primary care physicians, nurse practitioners in the country, probably, I think we said before, 350,000 or so, and you can look that up also, publicly available data. So the answer is that I hope those two pieces of information allow you to make the prediction of what those numbers are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so, you know, going to the payers, United and Humana, if we just assume, you know, their clients, those are the biggest administrators of Medicare Advantage and maybe have a greater appetite for bringing QuantaFlow in-house themselves. I mean, as we think about the other payers, Have you found that maybe they're more inclined to partner with the HRAs first before rolling out QuantaFlow themselves? I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, whether HRAs are more likely to be the next big clients versus the other national payers.
Sure. For those on the call who may not know the term HRA, you're referring to home risk assessment companies, and these are companies generally employed by the insurance plan and generally the ones who are using our variable price licensing program. As such, they do have a broad customer base across the smaller and larger of these insurance plans. So, in essence, we've seen it go both ways. I don't think we see a direct pattern. I think that we're even sort of backing off any statements about seasonality, because it was our conjecture that we might see seasonality in the business, specifically slower first quarters of the year versus fourth quarters. However, that pattern is not clearly established, and it may not be true. You know, we don't control, of course, when or how the patients use our device, but some may choose to use it more in some periods than others. And similarly, to the answer to your question, some insurance plans may prefer to work first in the home and then in the clinic, or vice versa. So we don't have the pattern, so I can't be too definitive in my answer.
Okay, yeah. And then, you know, one more, if I may, just on pipeline. How's progress with the iOS version coming? And can you speak a little bit about the congestive heart failure device that you have, and how we can think about that?
Well, we have mentioned in the past that we had done some work on congestive heart failure and then put it on the back burner. I would say that the focus that we have had for a number of years is really, the focus is similar to work on upgrading the current products and adding stuff to the data services rather than coming up with the newer products, either through acquisition and or to development of something like the congestive heart failure. The second part of your question, which is the first part you asked, was in terms of iOS app and platform. For those of you not knowing, we had started on a Windows platform, added on app platforms to be used on Android, and then said we were going to work on and add on the iOS. So we have all three platforms that are working, but it's the same software and the same type of results depending on platform, so it's unnecessary anymore for people to be worried about that, which we hope, you know, enhances the use of our product for those who happen to have tablets that are iOS.
All right, that's great. Thanks for taking the questions, and congrats on the year.
Thanks so much, Carl.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Clark Lehman with Logo Partners. Your line's now open.
Hello, Doug. Again, great work from the company. I'm wondering if you could refer me to any third-party white papers or studies on the economics of testing, PAD testing.
Yes. But probably offline I might be able to help you. I think some of the analysts who have actually asked questions earlier are some that do have spent time of just organizing that type of information. So they may actually have the best source. But if you contact me separately off the call, I can see if there are any other references that we might be able to give you, certainly on clinical benefits and what that means for the economics.
Okay. Okay, that was it. And then you don't disclose the number of tests done on a quarterly basis.
We have not been disclosing that. I think someone earlier in the call mentioned that we had mentioned a while ago a 2% penetration. We did say that if you use the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology criteria for who needs to be tested in the United States on a yearly basis, those criteria are age 65 years or older, or age 50 years or older with a risk factor, such as cigarette smoking or high blood pressure. A calculation of that, and you can look this up once again and Google it, there will be about 80 million people. So if one is 2% penetrated, you're doing between 1 and 2 million tests a year. If you're 3%, et cetera, you can do the math. So that's the to give you an idea. Also, we did have one publication that was out in 2018 where a couple of physicians had analyzed 226,000 or so cases that were done in a six-month period from participants who send data into us. So at least it gives you a sense that it's in that order of magnitude or more.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I show no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the call back over to Doug Murthy-Katorian for closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. And thank you all for joining us today. I look forward to updating you soon on our continued progress. We would hope to do that, obviously, as we usually do, probably at the end of the April timeframe, which would be the report of the first quarter. So hope to see you then, too. Thanks again. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.